Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Digital Audio Health by Cymatrax.
Welcome to the Rhonda Grant Show with your host, Rhonda Grant. If you believe that there is more to life than what you see right now, and you want to find out more, listen in as her guests share their journey and their extraordinary experiences. Now, here is your host, Rhonda Grant.
Welcome to the Rhonda Grant Show. Sometimes the universe has a way of placing people or obstacles in your path to help guide and direct you on your mission. Listen in as we discover the path my guest has traveled. Has she been inspired by a calling, crafted her journey, or a bit of both? I invite you to embrace the conversation and to use it to help you to recognize if this is happening in your life. Our guest today is Dixie Gillespie, a writer, activator, and fire starter. Her work as a coach and consultant has spanned nearly 30 years of activating human power and building meaningful and financial successful businesses. She describes herself as allergic to can't and addicted to story, and she's also a best-selling author, award-winning entrepreneur, and passionate advocate for the innate creative power of every individual. Welcome to the Rhonda Grant Show, Dixie.
I'm so thrilled to be here, Rhonda.
Well, it's so nice to be speaking with you today. Let our audience know a little bit about your background.
So probably the first thing anybody needs to know about my background is that I have always had a true allergy to being told I couldn't do anything. It just makes me prickly. Yeah. And so much of my background comes from determinedly doing what people said I couldn't do. That's been tempered to really only doing the things that I choose to do, whether or not somebody tells me I can't do it. So with age comes wisdom, right? But that's very much the underlying structure of a lot of my background.
Yes, and age comes wisdom. So what are some of the things that you learned?
I think the most important thing that I learned, two things that I have to bookmark, if you will. One is that there is nothing that doesn't have a seed of love in it. So often we reject what's ugly and we reject what's painful and we resist everything that we don't want. And yet everything, every experience, everything, and I really do see everything as part of everything, right? There's nothing that isn't mm-hmm. a part of that thing that I'm part of. So everything has the seed of love. The other was really this understanding that I always have been at choice, that there is nothing that is not for me, and there's nothing that's destined for me that I can't just say no to, that I've always been at choice. So it really comes down to, if there's love in everything and I'm always at choice, I can just choose the love, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you find, though, that when people come across obstacles, they really resist those obstacles? It causes them stress and they sort of forget that these are life's lessons. These are our journeys to make us stronger.
I think we spend most of our life in resistance Rhonda, and it's why we don't live the life that we choose. I always say a lot of people are living for a life they'll never allow themselves to have. So we say, I'm living for this. I want this in the future. I'm living for the day when. But because we're really in resistance and we're really focused on what we don't want, we're focused on what we stand against, we never actually create what we choose. The very structure of resistance is to be in relationship to what we resist. You can't be in resistance without being locked in a relationship with that which you are resisting. So people say what you resist persists. It doesn't really do anything. You're doing it all. That thing that you resist, it's not doing anything. You've locked yourself in a relationship with it. So everything you create from a place of resistance has to be in relationship to that which you resist.
Yes, because with resistance, I mean, people start using specific language around that, which sounds like this always happens. I knew that was going to happen. One thing after another. And we start to lay down these types of negative ideas into our brain. And so it keeps us from seeing, having sight, and seeing that there is lessons here to learn.
Yeah, it's more than lessons. I mean, lessons are important.
Yes.
But it's a stimuli for growth. Okay. Everything that we encounter, we can choose to use it as something that stimulates us, that literally enlivens us to grow.
So if you were coaching someone and they had a goal in life that they wanted to, let's say, open a business or do something, and they came with you with all these reasons why they shouldn't, or the obstacles that were laying in front of them to open the business, what kind of advice would you give them, or what kind of coaching would you give them?
My first book was really written to that. It was titled Just Blow It Up, Firepower for Living an Unlimited Life. So it really took this metaphor of everything that we say we can't do as a brick in the wall. I can't this, there's a brick. I can't that, there's a brick, right? And so it was really a method for just blowing those walls up. And it was written because in coaching, I always start with, what do you want to do? What do you want to create? What is it that you want to be true that isn't true for you today? That's why you're here, right? There's something you want to be true for you and it's not true for you today. What is it? And they would say, this is what I want. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to create. And then within minutes, if not seconds, they would follow that with, but I can't because. And the because is a powerful word. They've done marketing studies on the use of the word because and watched people respond in completely illogical ways just because somebody said because. So we're using that language with ourselves. I can't because. And as soon as we say because to ourselves, there's a cause. And we will never do what we say we can't because there's a because, right? So I just saw that as all these bricks and many of them laid by other people's ideas, but we took them. We're the ones that put them in the wall. Just because somebody else handed us a brick didn't mean that we needed to add it to the wall of I can't, right? And so unpacking that, there are four types of walls. There's a method that I use for blowing them up, so to speak. I call it the blasting caps. But the most important thing comes down to, I often ask, do you want what you want or only what you want to want? And that's not a tongue twister, that's a brain twister.
Yeah, it's a brain twister.
But it's my true first question, because so often what they're saying they want isn't what they want. It's they want this because they think it will do something else for them. They want this because maybe it'll make up for something that they think they can't have. So it's a substitute want. they want this because other people will be proud. What they really want is somebody will that will be proud of me. One person literally said, I want to do this. Why? Because I'm good at it. So what you really want is to do something you feel like you're good at. Yay. How many things could that be, right? So my first challenge to every client is the choice that you're making a true choice? Is it an end result? Is it something that you want because you love it? There's no other reason. And you would truly love to create it. Because so many people, the goals that they're setting, their secondary intentions attached to something else, they're something that they think they want because they should. They're attached to, if I had this, I wouldn't have this. So the real goal is to not have the other thing, right? The focus is really on the negative, mm-hmm. and they're not in true choice. So it makes it almost impossible to create what you really want if you're not really choosing it.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. So can you give us an example of what that would look like? Because our listening audience are saying, well, why wouldn't you want to do what you love? And what outside influences could impede you from doing that?
It's a beautiful question for each of us to ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now ask yourself, well, why wouldn't you want to do what you love? And what is it that you think is keeping you from doing it? And the question I always ask clients, especially in the coaching group, I have a coaching group that it's kind of like a drop-in yoga class, really.
Nice.
You know, we do 5 sessions a week and you come to the sessions that you can make. And it's very, very, very much a community of people that are growing into what I call super creators together. And the thing I ask them over and over, where's the power? Where's the power? Is the power in the thing that you really want because you love it? Or is the power in all the things that you think are between you and it? Or the things that you think you have to do first in order to deserve it? And quite often where we're putting the power, Rhonda, is in an identity. We think the identity is ourself. People say, oh, I need to get out of my own way. I'm sabotaging myself. It's self, self, self. It's not yourself. It's your identity. And your identity is something that you created. But we give that identity of I'm not capable, or I just don't belong. It's not for me, or I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. We give that identity all the power
mm-hmm.
instead of giving power to the love that we have for our creation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you said something important there, and people have used this and said this often, but I don't think people really think about it, is how do you get out of your own way? People don't realize that their way is stopping them from doing what they really want to do. Like, they don't know how they're in their way. Can we just sort of dissect that a little bit?
Absolutely. It's really about focus and orientation. So most often, humans are naturally oriented from a belief that they formed when they were still, 4 or younger, when they were trying to figure out how things are. So we come into the world from having been, pure creative spirit, soul, however you yes. experience that part of yourself. Well, as soul, let's just use that word. That's
yes,
the way I identify
that.
With it. As soul, we're not separate from anything. We experience ourselves as part of everything else. We're a unique expression of it, but we're not separate from it, right? I can define myself, but I don't separate myself as soul. And then, we're born. And initially, even in the womb and our first experience of life, all of our wants are taken care of. We still don't really experience ourselves as separate. We just, everything's done for us. And then we come into a realization, a recognition that we're not really materially part of everything anymore. And we start to accept the illusion of the material reality instead of our true spirit or soul reality. My true self isn't all in this body. I'm far bigger than what is embodied here in a material plane.
Yes.
But babies don't make sense of that, right? We start thinking, I need to make sense of the world. I need to figure out how it is. What are the rules for getting what I want? Because the rules have clearly changed. Before, I didn't have to do anything but be. Mm-hmm. I existed. I got what I wanted. It was wonderful. Now I actually have to do something because there are rules about getting what I want. And then our next question is, once I kind of think I know how it is, how am I? How am I in relationship to the world? How am I in all of this it and rules? What are the rules for me? So we figure out how it is, and then we figure out how we are, and how we are in that understanding is always separate and limited. Always separate and limited. So in that separateness and that limitedness, we start orienting from a belief of, well, maybe I don't get everything that I want because I'm not good enough. Mm. And maybe we just fasten on that. And that becomes the, well, I have to be good enough to get what I want. Those are the rules. This is how it is. And how I am, I'm not good enough. So that answers the question of why I don't always get what I want. And then everything that we create from that point is oriented from the, I need to prove that I'm good enough. Or it might be, I don't belong. That might be the explanation that we settle on and the identity belief that we end up with. A lot of people call these the wounded identity beliefs or the original wound, right? Mm-hmm. If you study the Enneagram, it aligns with this pretty nicely. This is your orientation. But when we're orienting from a place of limited, you know, a limited perspective, limited ability, limited existence, that's a limited identity, right? Mm-hmm. Our identity, the way I explain identity, I don't use dictionary definitions because sometimes they aren't workable. The working definition that I use for identity in the coaching that I do is that your identity is simply the current way that you understand, experience, and express your true self. Your true self is limitless. The identity is a limited understanding, experience, and expression of that limitless true self. Think of it like a kaleidoscope. So if all the everything is in the kaleidoscope, every turn of the kaleidoscope gives you a different arrangement. It's a different way to understand, experience, and express an arrangement of what's in the kaleidoscope. So what's in the kaleidoscope never changes, but our identity does. Mm-hmm. If we're orienting out of that one expression and we think that expression has to be perfect, has to be good enough, has to be worthy, has to belong, has to be capable, and our understanding of ourself is that we're none of those things, then everything we create is to try to make up for that. It's not because we really love it. It's to try to make up for that. But if we actually created something that made up for that, we wouldn't be that identity anymore. We wouldn't even know who we are because we're identifying as a person who isn't that. So we create this psychological tension to be true to our identity, which isn't that, to try to validate that by creating something that proves it wrong. Well, at the same time, we're not going to allow that to be proven wrong. We absolutely put ourselves in a catch-22. Whereas if we can just orient from the understanding that we are unlimited beings in a limited experience, here to create in the material world, those beliefs don't matter. I hear all the people, I need to eliminate my limiting beliefs. I need to get rid of these beliefs. I'm like, darling, they're part of the human experience. They're not going anywhere, but they will get smaller. They will get smaller because they atrophy when you don't use them. So don't create from them and they won't matter.
Beautiful. That's just beautiful. You spoke about something there about being in your true essence. And I find that a lot of the time there's so much noise and there's so much we've learned over our life that keeps us small and narrows us in not really staying in the true essence or finding the trueness of us. We act like a boomerang. We send something out, it comes back. somebody, you know, we're repelling what people are saying to us. And there's so much to be said about just, well, I mean, sitting, meditating, getting in touch with your heart, your true essence, and see what comes from there that you should be doing.
I would love to just sit with what you just said. It's beautiful. I call it standing in truth and power.
Standing in truth and power.
This is why the process that I use, I call it return to your power. People talk about giving their power away. Well, you can't really. You can't give your power away. You can give something else, you know, you can let something else be powerful. You can give it all the power in the structure, but you can't give your power away. It's inherent. It's an essential, inherent part of who you truly are. So you can step out of it. You can pretend you don't have it. You can not exercise it, but you can't give it away. What you can do is return to it. And that standing in truth and power is the truth of who I am, the truth of what I call the nature and purpose. My true nature is to be indivisible from the all, indivisible from the divine. That's my true nature, but my true nature is also to be a unique expression of that. I'm uniquely me, an unlimited being who's chosen to live a limited experience in order to create in the material world. That is my purpose, to create here in the material world. And if I'm choosing what I create out of that true nature, then everything I choose to create is in alignment with the divine, because in my true nature, I'm not separate from the divine. So I couldn't very well choose anything as a purpose that would be not in alignment with the divine if I'm experiencing myself as part of the divine. You see how that all just, the thread just pulls through, you know, perfectly when that's my orientation, when that's my intention. That's standing in truth. Standing in power is realizing that we are always sovereign in our life. We can abdicate that, but it's still what we were born to be, sovereign in our life. And the thing that I'm always sovereign of is my experience. I always get to choose my experience. Circumstances are not how we change our reality. We change our circumstances by changing the reality of our experience, because our experience defines our reality. So if I change my experience, which I am sovereign to do, my circumstances will change to align with that. That's just structure. They have to, because I will choose everything that I express energetically, you know, feminine action, decisions, my dreams, and my masculine actions, my doing out in the world will be defined by my experience. And that will change my circumstances.
Wonderful. You are really giving us a lot of things to think about, for sure. But I mean, there might be an audience member right now that's thinking, but how do I get back to me? If I find that I've lost myself along the way, how do I get back to me? Do you have any exercises that you would recommend that people to help them get back to who they are?
Yes. It's really what the truth about Lyncher was written about. It's a path back to the self before the self was edited. You know, that's the way I think of what we do to young people. We edit them. You can't be this. That's not practical. You can't do that. It's not safe, right? We're constantly editing these little unlimited beings that are in our care. And we've all been edited. And, you know, people talk about the trauma that I've experienced in my life. And my answer to that is every child has been traumatized in some way, because trauma is an experience, not an event. There are events in my life that people point to and go, oh, you've been traumatized. But the truth is, it's part of the human evolution to experience trauma. And part of that trauma is being edited. So finding our way back to the unedited truth of ourselves. One of the exercises I love to do, and one of the things I teach, is some people call it automatic writing, downloading. I call it just, you know, writing out of my true self, my super conscious, the level of consciousness that lives above the unconscious and the self-conscious is pulling what's true out of that place, because that has not been edited. That's the true story in my superconscious. So I'm actually holding a writing retreat next month. That's not a writer's retreat. It's a writing retreat, because writing, it's a retreat to write as a way of discovering self. But here's an exercise that we're going to use. And it is to do what we call the I am exercise. And if you'd like, I would love to gift your audience with an I am activation meditation. And the easiest way, just have them email me and I'll be happy to send it to them. But the I am is a statement of identity. And I have people start with list all the things that you are in your material life. So we list all the things that are relationships. You know, I am a daughter or son. That's implicit in you being alive, right?
Yes.
Often I am a sister or brother. I am a mother or father. I am a lover. I am a friend. And then we can get into titles, right? I am a coach. I am a, you know, I often say I'm an activator and a fire starter, because I feel like that's what actually happens when I do what I do, right? I am these things. These are titles and relationships. And we realize most of those things can be taken away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, even being the child of parents, I'm technically the child of parents, but both of mine have passed. So in my current representation, I am no one's child in the living world. All of those things can be taken away. So then I ask people to go into the I am that can't be taken away. These are things that we're choosing. So I am a compassionate being. That's a choice and something I've cultivated. Nobody can take that away except me making a different choice, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I am a lover of roses. Have been since I saw one and stuck my nose in it, and probably always will be. Nobody can take that away unless I make a different choice. So what are all the I am statements that you can make that nobody could ever take away from you unless you make a different choice? And that's the second piece. See how we're just peeling back layers, right? And then we go into the I am, and this is what I have been since conception. And for me, I get into the I am a unique expression of all that is divine. Wow. When I settle into that I am, it gives context to everything else. But not only can no one take that away, I can't make a different choice. I am a powerful creator. I've created everything that I've experienced, some of it consciously, some of it not consciously, and I can tell the difference, right? But I am a powerful creator. I can't even make a different choice. That's just inherent. So those three levels of peeling back the layers of I am, the things that are temporal that can be taken away, the things that you choose, you could make a different choice, and the things that are inherent that you cannot choose to be other than that. And you start recognizing that you have not been living out of your true self. You've been living out of layers of identity.
That is just incredible. And you know, I really was getting emotional when you made the transition from what we can see and touch and know concretely to what is always playing in the background, that sometimes we ignore those types of signals during the day. And we're talking about intuition, gut feelings, and all of that, that you need to be freed up in your life in order to stay in touch with the essence of yourself. That exercise that you're talking about, I have never heard anything like that. And the word that I wrote down was powerful. Very, very powerful to get from, you know, I love this and I am, I am, I am, I am, and then going to the soul level of who we really truly are as people. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's just so, so wonderful to hear about that. Do in the morning when you rise, do you have certain things that you do to prepare yourself for the day and for the work that you do, Dixie?
Absolutely. How we begin and end our creation cycles determines what happens in between, right? So I think of every day and sometimes pieces of the day as different creation cycles. I will begin today. I will complete today. I will begin my sleep. I will complete my sleep. And the state that we're in, the inner state that we're in when we go into and complete a new cycle, determines the outcome of the cycle. So absolutely, how we begin our day, how we end our day, frames that cycle of doing in the world and of doing in the unseen. Because sleep is absolutely when we do, when we take action in the unseen. I actually had one of my favorite challenges from a coach that I worked with, and coaches have coaches. We all know that. And she said, how are you sleeping? And I said, you know, I'm busy, really busy in my sleep. She said, Dixie, when are you going to start getting paid in the material world for what you're doing in the non-material world? And it so stuck with me that a lot of the work that I was doing, air quotes around the doing, was while I was sleeping. That was my integration time. That was my dream time. That was when I was giving myself leeway to create in the unseen. Part of what I did with that is I created a morning that lets me transition that doing into the day so that I'm not staying busy doing it all in my sleep, because that was the only time I was giving myself permission to do that work. So the first thing I do in the morning is orientation. You know, we talked about, am I orienting from my limited perspective and my identity? Am I orienting from my unlimited perspective and what I'm here to create? So I start with a meditation that we call the Core Four. I actually brought this from my coach, Christopher Duncan, who got pieces of it from William White Cloud. And I think he got pieces, you know, it's a legacy, these four choices. And I love being part of a legacy. You know, I love this continuing the tradition. So part of my tradition is I actually have my own orientational choice. And that is to always create from a place of truth, power, love, and compassion. So I start there. I choose to create from a place of truth, power, love, and compassion. And then I use the four orientational choices the way that mostly the way I make some modifications, but those are: first, I choose to create a life I love. Because really, if we're not creating a life we love, we're not consciously creating. So I choose to create a life I love. And then the second is, I choose to be the predominant creator of my life. This is the sovereignty. This is in any dance that's my life I'm leading. If I join a dance in somebody else's life, they lead. They are the predominant creator. And the beautiful thing about orienting here is it recognizes I am sovereign in my life. Everyone else is sovereign in theirs. We're all sovereign, sharing space. And it's a beautiful feeling. And then I choose to live my true nature and purpose. We talked about the true nature and purpose. And then I choose to create health and vitality. I choose to create health and vitality in my body, my vehicle for experiencing and impacting this world. I choose to create health and vitality in my environment, in my relationships, in the thoughts I give energy to, in my emotional state. I choose to create health and vitality. And then I bring that back around, because what is vitality except more life? So I've just chosen more life, which comes right back for me into, wow, and I choose to create a life I love. So with that more life, I can create more love. And isn't that just beautiful? I can orient. It takes a minute for me now. I actually do it as a metaphor of compass points. So in my practice, I start by seeing myself in the center, feeling that centeredness of right in the middle of the compass, in that personal orientation. You know, I choose to live in truth, power, love, and compassion. And then the four choices are my compass points. I come back around to true north, choosing to live a life I love. And then I connect into what my personal choices are that I'm creating right now. So until this weekend, I was creating the launch of The Truth About Winter. That book was 11 years from the writing of it to the publishing of it.
I love that. I just want to say, I love that, because there's going to be people who have put away a book for 4 years and need to bring that out. And it doesn't matter. Time doesn't matter when it comes to a book. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, I'm glad that you pointed that out, because whether they've written it or they're still sitting on it, or whether it lives in their heart and their head and they're still sitting on it, mm-hmm. it's never too late for a story. I really felt it was too early for that story. Like, the world wasn't ready for The Truth About Winter, and I wasn't sure I was ready. I mean, standing in truth and power on that story is, it's a big thing to put that stake in the ground with what the nature of that book. But for me, every morning it was, this is my choice. This is what I'm creating. And so when I got up this morning, having finished the print launch and hit all the number ones and done the thing, this morning, that choice changed to what is next, right? I celebrated a completion, and now I have space for a new choice. So that's my morning practice. Evening practice is always review the day and make my choices for the next day.
You make it sound so simple, but you know, there's going to be people that say, I don't love my life. And we are merely a blip in time. And if you're not enjoying your life, you need to re-listen to this podcast and start writing down all of the excellent ideas and direction that Dixie is providing with us today, because it's very powerful, inspiring. And I'm just loving this. You're listening to The Rhonda Grant Show right now, whose podcast has been treated with Digital Audio Health by my sponsor. And we are speaking with Dixie Gillespie today. Please let people know how they may reach out to you.
Well, I'm happy to receive emails. That's usually the easiest way to get my attention, is my inbox. And that email is whatever's easiest to remember. It's dixie@returntoyourpower.com, or just dixiegillespie@gmail is the easiest for people to remember. Both of those will reach me. If you'd love to have a download of that I Am activation meditation, let me know. I'm happy to send it to you. Other than that, my website is this close to a new launch. So it's a splash page right now. Should come out of maintenance mode tonight or tomorrow, but it's dixiegillespie.com. So watch for that. And then social media, you know, this is a connection place. This is the global, I don't even think of it as virtual. You're having a real life, I'm having a real life. This is not my virtual life I'm having here. So by all means, find me on Facebook or LinkedIn. I'd love to connect.
Wonderful. What extraordinary discovery have you found in your life, Dixie?
That most of what I believe is a problem is either not a problem, or it's a problem that doesn't matter that much. That when I focus on the problem, I always fix the problem, but I fix it like concrete, not like a solution. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm focused on it, every solution, everything I can come up with from that focus, well, that problem is still part of my creation. Whereas when I just say, I'm going to create what I want to create, problems tend to get solved coincidentally, or they just dissolve or resolve. And what I thought was a problem turns out wasn't really a problem. So when we fixate on a problem, we fix it in place. That's been because as a consultant, Rhonda, I was paid a lot for being a problem solver. That was my value. I could solve problems. So what did I do? I went around identifying problems and focusing on problems so that I could create value for myself by solving said problems. And then we wonder, why do these problems keep reoccurring? Because we fixated on them, and we fixed them into the structure of what we created. That's been the most, and I credit Robert Fritz for that. Fantastic book, Path of Least Resistance. I found it was originally titled Corporate Tides, but now it's titled The Path of Least Resistance for Managers. That has been a guiding light for me, and I'm currently studying with Robert before he retires. But that understanding of don't fixate on the problem, stay focused on what you're creating. Problems get taken care of, but it's just coincidental to the creation.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Do you feel that you've been called to your journey?
Not only have I been called, but when I said no, thank you, I'd like to just go live a life as a very practical consultant, making a lot of money for telling people what to do, I got told, no, that's not why you're here. So yeah, you know, when we have that calling, it's so archetypical, the hero's journey. But there's really no point in refusing the call because your joy isn't answering it. So when you turn down that calling, I always remind myself, I made choices while I was still a soul. When I was in divine understanding of what I was really here to do, I made choices. And I am allowed to refuse those choices. But the true joy in this lifetime is by living those choices. And that's my calling. So if you're going to choose joy, choose what your soul chose back when you had complete divine understanding before you had this limited human understanding.
Can you indicate to our audience what the difference is when you know it's your calling? Because a lot of people don't know the difference and, oh, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. To what your real true calling is in life, because it's very powerful. And I find that with me, if I start reviewing my life in a day and I start saying, but if I didn't do this, then that, and I, you know, go back and forth with certain things, and I go, well, I haven't got a choice here. This is what I have to do. It's not that I can pull that back and stop. Well, I could pull it back and stop doing it, but my happiness level would be decreased, right? And so what would your advice be on that?
It's funny that you ask. I actually was sitting at a funeral and the eulogies over and over said, Steve was so passionate and Steve was so passionate. And I suddenly started crying as much for myself as I was for Steve, because I realized I wasn't passionate anymore. Mm. I'd always been, you know, fire starter, on fire. I mean, my nickname in grade school was Dixie Dynamite, because I was always on fire. And I sat there, you know, and this was when I was consulting and very successful by any person's standards.
Yes.
And that little light of passion was barely a flicker. Mm. And I felt like, you know, it wasn't my funeral, but it could have been, because mm-hmm. I was no longer passionate. And so I asked that question, like, where did that go? What, you know, how do I get it back? And I took myself on a retreat and took one book and a whole lot of notebooks and started examining. And this is the conclusion I came to and what I've operated under since, that what fires us up, what fuels our passion, you know, what we feed it on, is our purpose, that the purpose shapes and fuels the passion. And the purpose is really outcomes. It's not just what am I here to do activity-wise. There's a lot of activities that I enjoy that aren't my purpose. There are a lot of activities I don't necessarily enjoy the activity, but it's on purpose for me, right? That the indication of purpose was an outcome. So here's the question I would like to pose. As you go back and just review your timeline back as far as you can remember, what are those things that you got to be part of? You were the cause of it happening, or you contributed to it happening, that you still go, yes, I was part of that. I got to help bring that into the world. And I tell you, I quit consulting after that retreat, little self-retreat with myself, because I realized the only thing that still fired me up was people getting to do the things they thought were impossible. It was the people blowing up the brick walls. It was the people saying, I've always wanted this. I wanted to create this, but I thought I couldn't. And now I have. I went from that's not possible, I don't know how, to I'm still not sure how I did it, but I did it. That outcome was kind of that umbrella theme over everything that still fired me up. From the time that I could remember teaching kids, I learned to read early. My mother invested in me by reading to me constantly, so I learned to read early. Mm-hmm. Remembering helping people who were struggling with processing writing and just helping them to read. Like, it's still, I don't think I'm ever going to get this. Oh, wow, this makes sense. You know, through all the businesses that I had worked with and consulted with, that the owner was saying, I don't think it's possible for us to hit those numbers. I don't think it's possible for us to do that without dissension in the staff, to we're doing it. It's like, well, there's your purpose. Mm-hmm. And that fuels your passion. So what fires you up?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you talked about that, because I was going to ask you the definition of fire starter.
So I really, the reason that I, and partly because I've been called things like that for so long, but so many people said, you taught me how to light my fire. You taught me what lights my fire. Mm-hmm. You helped me reconnect to something that really keeps me fired up. You know, it takes me back to, I think maybe it was Richard Pryor. I can't remember for sure who said it, that people came to see him perform, that it was like, you know, I come in, I set myself on fire, people come to see me burn. And there's a destructive way to do that. But what I teach, and the reason it's so important to me, is that, you know, when we have purpose, we're not just setting ourselves on fire to destroy ourselves so people will come to watch us burn. We're not destroying ourselves. We're creating everything. And people come to see that fire and to warm themselves at it and to light their own fires from it. And it's generative rather than destructive. So that's what I ask myself to live up to as a fire starter, is that, you know, I stay on fire. Other people can light their fire. I teach other people how to connect back to the source of their own fire. Because, you know, more fire in the world's got to be a good thing, right, Rhonda? Yes.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Dixie. It's so insightful to listen to you and the growth that you've had to have gone through to have best-selling books. I mean, it's just incredible what you've done with your life. Is there anything else that I have not asked you that you would like to talk about?
We've talked about so many of my favorite things, good, which just makes it a beautiful experience for me. You know, the thing that I get asked a lot, especially about the truth about Winter, is, you know, how do we know what our personal truth is? And I think that's something that I would love to leave people with is, you know, when I think about the way that I tell the story of my life, I've been told I'm in denial, that, you know, I'm still not really processing what happened to me, you know, all the things. And it's just, I know when I listen to my truth, I know there was love in my story. And I know that I can choose that is the truth of my story, or I can choose the pain and say that is the truth of my story. And there's a scene that I wrote in The Truth About Winter that I think explains it really well. And in this scene, there's a character, his name's David, who demonstrates by pushing the character close to a rose bush. So from a distance, you see the rose bush, and then he moves her right up to one of the beautiful blooms, full open rose. Now, what do you see? Well, I see a rose. Shift a little bit. Now, what do you see? I see a thorn, and that's scary, right? Our lives, our stories, they're the whole rose bush. They're the roots we can't see. They're the canes that are bright and obviously alive. They're the dark canes that we wouldn't know have life in them. They're the rose bloom. They're the thorn. That's life. That's just what every human experience is full of in order to bloom. All those things are necessary. But when you choose the truth of your story, I'm going to ask each of you to find the rose. To find the rose, even if it hasn't bloomed for a long time. Mm-hmm. It still has the intelligence, the seed, the memory of how to create a bloom. Just find the rose.
Beautiful. And a lot of people love roses. A great analogy and a great way to finish up the show. Thank you so much, Dixie, for being on the Rhonda Grant Show. I thoroughly enjoyed our journey together today. Theme song for the Rhonda Grant Show is Sun on the Water, composed and performed by my friend John Park Wheeler. This is Rhonda Grant with The Rhonda Grant Show, author of Magical Forces Within, Extraordinary Discoveries in an Ordinary Life, inviting you to look for the magical forces within yourself today and every day.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rhonda Grant Show with your host, Rhonda Grant. If you would like to find out more information about Rhonda and her upcoming guests and the work that she does, go to her website, rhondagrantauthor.com. That's rhondagrantauthor.com.
Digital Audio Health by Cymatrax.